This is a Lip Media podcast.
This podcast is recorded on the lands of the Woolgaroo-Kabah, Bindal and Wurundjeri peoples. The country we now call Australia was built on the stolen lands of hundreds of unique Indigenous nations, and we recognise that as white women, we continue to partake in and benefit from the act of colonisation. We pay our respects to elders past, present and emerging.
Slut. Welcome to Book Slut, a podcast bringing erotica out of the gutter and into a snobbier gutter. Hi, my name is Abby.
And I'm Sam. It should go without saying that this podcast is not safe for work, so put your headphones in.
Feels like I haven't seen, well, I mean, I haven't seen you in ages.
I know, it's been so long. I miss you.
I miss you. I've been here, what, like 5 weeks now or something?
That is insane. It blows my mind how quickly that time has gone.
So to bring us back together, I thought we'd talk about periods.
Period sex. Yeah, I'm keen.
Not the first nor the last time that song is going to get sung, I'm sure.
I love it so much.
So before we start, we want to just have a little note on terminology. As much as we can, we will be using the term people who menstruate, or alternatively, menstruators.
Menstruators just makes me feel like I'm a robot, like I'm just like a bleeding robot, you know?
aren't we all? Aren't we all just bleeding robots?
Pretty much.
And this is, it's a bit of a shift in terminology, I think, that's relatively recent, actually. And it's a move towards being a lot more inclusive, recognizing that there are cisgender women who don't have periods due to a range of factors, or maybe never started menstruating, or are transgender or intersex. And then there are also people who menstruate who are not cisgender women, such as trans men, intersex, genderqueer, non-binary. So kind of putting menstruation into a binary is incredibly not inclusive to all of those people. Mm. But I will say for myself, like it is a shift in how I would normally talk about periods. So I may slip up and I apologize if I do so in advance, but we will try and kind of call each other out on it.
Yeah, definitely. And also, I mean, some of the research that I've done, I'm not sure about the research you've done and whatnot, does reference some sort of historical things or studies that were specifically done on women. So I think when we do say women, we'll try to differentiate where they were, where it is operating in a binary and where it's not.
Yeah, absolutely. So, oh, I need to send you, I would like to get your live reaction to the cover page of this book. I'll have to send it to you via WhatsApp. So this week I read Shark Week by Lucy Westerna, and I tried to Google Lucy, and then I realized that it was very obviously a pen name, and is actually the name of Mina's friend who dies in Dracula.
Oh.
And I was like, there are so many layers to this story. Yeah. Already. But
wow, especially thinking about blood and okay.
So I just sent you the cover.
Oh God.
What I particularly like are the little sharks up in the title.
Oh yeah. I love that she's wearing, so it's a picture of a woman in a black bikini with bright red shoes. Like something about the red shoe, like did her period like drip down onto her shoe? Like what is going on?
Yeah, I mean, I can't answer these questions.
Also, the title Shark Week makes me think of, this is not accurate, but it makes me immediately think of Shark Week. Ooh-ah. That's not what they say, but that's...
So Shark Week, it's a short story. There's not much plot. So the main character, who I'm pretty sure is not named.
Okay.
Misk Woman is having a movie marathon with her friend, Steven, and to other people, and it's a movie marathon about shark movies.
Wait.
And
it's a movie marathon about shark?
Oh, no.
Sorry, of shark.
Movie marathon of shark movies.
Okay.
I've had a long day at work, okay? And then the other friends cancel, and she's like, oh, these people cancelled. But in her internal monologue, she's like, you know that she's into this Steven guy, which is like the, possibly one of the top least sexiest names.
Steven.
I think we can agree.
Yeah.
Steve. some of the descriptions of the characters I loved, because I felt like the story went to great lengths to show him as like sensitive but masculine, because you can't possibly be sensitive and masculine, like that would be weird. So he's like helping her set up for this night, and she says, I smiled as I watched him, observing how carefully he made sure none of the chips got crushed or broken. For a big athletic hunk, he had a very caring, sensitive nature.
I'm just imagining this guy with like big muscles on his fingers being like, don't crush the chips.
Yeah, I'm picturing like a giant man just like pulling out a chip one at a time and carefully placing it in the bowl like a psychopath.
I mean, to be fair, nobody likes crushed chips. So good one, Stephen.
So 1 point for Stephen. So they're watching these movies, and she's like, oh, I don't like blood. And then...
Or was he like, I do.
A little, yeah. Seemed as if, like, seeing blood made her, like, cramp in sympathy.
Oh. Even in, that like, part I was... a shark context? Like...
Yeah. Yeah. So, and she's on her period. And then it just kind of goes, hey, are you okay? Steve asked with concern. I nodded shyly, just ... girl stuff. Steve put his arm around me and drew me close for a comforting hug. Shit, that must hurt, he said. Sounds like you're on your shark week. Ha ha.
Oh, God. How do you feel about the term shark week? Or other euphemisms?
I really love the term rags. Like, I enjoy both saying I'm on my rags and other people are on their rags. I think it's a great term. I also don't mind, I mean, mainly because of Clueless, like riding the crimson wave.
I really, yeah. That's quite good.
But, oh, there was this great term actually in one of the articles I was reading where it was talking about women's reactions to having sex on their period, which we'll get into a bit later. But the term she used was like, when I'm throwing clots.
Oh my God. That's so visceral.
And she meant it in like when she's in at the heavy stage of her period. Yep. But like calling it throwing clots is like...
Oh, you weren't quite look at like clotted cream in the same way. What about things like the painters are in or Auntie Flo?
God, if someone said the painters are in, I would assume that they meant they had literal painters. I have never heard that in my life. Auntie Flo, I think, is like, I don't know, kind of cutesy.
Yeah.
I don't particularly like that, but I don't really.
It's something that like a middle-aged family member would say.
Yeah, and I feel like, to me, I don't really care what you want to call it, honestly. Like, it doesn't really bother me. The thing that bothers me is when it's used as like a, oh, are you on your rags, or are you, you know, oh, is it that time of the month? That time of the month is never used well.
No. Because it's always like accompanied with she's moody, like must be that time of the month, or, you know?
Yeah.
I'm similar to you. I don't really care what you want to call it, but I think that it's just the fact that there are so many different euphemisms for it kind of just go to show how funny we still are about talking about menstruation, which is hard to say.
It's a hard word.
And periods, you know? Like, we're still so funny about saying it that I have to be like, oh, Auntie Flo's come to stay.
I remember being... And it would be interesting to talk to people about this who were in single-sex schools. But I remember, for some reason, God, I was such a weird kid, but being very determined to not be weird about it in front of my guy friends.
Mm.
I was always very like, boys should know about this.
Yeah, well, they should.
Yeah, and I still believe that. Like, it's interesting because, like, I personally find my own period quite gross. Like, I don't love it. I'm not like, woo!
My moon.
I don't enjoy it. So I also, yeah, I also don't think that men should be forced to, like, be super into periods, but there shouldn't be this, like, immediate disgust. Yeah.
I think as we go through this episode, it will be interesting because I think we have slightly different kind of, perceptions or relationships to our menzies. Menzies? Is that how you say that?
Sure. I mean, I don't know. I learned another new word, the word for, like, your first bleed, menage,
yeah,
or whatever it's called. I don't know how to say that word either, but I was like, I'd never even heard of that word before.
Me neither.
It's...
I was like, oh, so fancy. You make it sound so nice when in reality I've just got a big blood patch on my skirt. Was it a big deal when you got your period? Was it a big deal?
Oh, yeah. I do remember being upset because I was quite late.
Oh.
A lot of my friends already had their periods and I was like, what the fuck is happening to me? But what about you? Was it a big deal? I can imagine your mum being quite into...
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That. Spot on. She was great. She got me a card, which was really sweet.
It's cute.
And it was always, yeah, it was always kind of framed as like a good thing in the house. You know, it was womanhood. It was, you know, which, you know, in hindsight now is like, oh, okay, probably question this idea of womanhood. But it was, you know, it was kind of seen as like this... beautiful cyclical thing rather than being like a burden.
And I mean, that's the conflict, isn't it? It's periods as something to be celebrated and something kind of beautiful in a way, and then periods as something that's shameful and something that makes women dirty.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's kind of the conflict. And often I feel like even if women celebrate it, society says it's something shameful.
Yeah. Like, I would agree that there's kind of that, like, the two extremes across a lot of cultures, that the vast majority do kind of have this stigma and taboo around it and, like, perceive it quite negatively. But there are these kind of, like, pockets of societies and cultures that do swing really hard the other way and, like, hold it in really high esteem and, like, regard it as being, like, sacred and fertility and powerful. And, like,
and I think, like... It's two sides of the same coin, because one of the things that I read that really resonated with me was that it's saying, like, the fact that it is strongly tied to this notion of inverted commas womanhood means that it's linked with reproduction and also the emergent sexuality of women, and that terrifies society. You know, we've spoken about that so often, that it makes sense that the pushback against that would be to say, you know, it's dirty and you should hide it because people are scared of it, right?
Yeah. So I've got a couple of historical examples of popping up in historical texts, which are a bit of a bummer. So in Leviticus, there's a section, how do you say it when it's like 20:18? Like, what is that? How do you say that?
Section 20, subsection 18.
All right. I mean, you're a lawyer, so we'll go with that. I don't know how to, like... That's the religious.
That's what a couple of years of Bible study taught me. I think they just say 21:12, or, you know, like, okay. They just say Leviticus 20. I'm pretty sure. I don't know.
Okay, let's go with that. Leviticus 20:18 says, if a man has sexual relations with a menstruating woman, he has exposed her nakedness, laying bare her fountain. He has exposed the source of her blood. Both are eliminated from contact with their people. And also in Leviticus, there's this, it just goes on and on.
Leviticus, like, he had some real strong opinions.
Oh, yeah. It's like, When a woman has her regular flow of blood, the impurity of her monthly period will last 7 days, and anyone who touches her will be unclean. And then it goes on, like, anything she lies on during her period will be unclean. Anything she sits on during her period will be unclean. Blah, blah, blah. Like, everything is unclean.
She's got a lot of cleaning to do after that. We get it, all right?
And actually, something that came up while I was reading was across, like, all five sort of major religions, so Judaism, Christianity, Buddhism, Hinduism, and Islam, all of them include some kind of reference to abstaining from sex while menstruating.
Yeah.
Mainly tied to this idea of being unclean or being impure.
Yeah, the religions have a little bit to answer for on this front. It reminded me when I was looking at this, I don't know if you saw this on the news, but in, I think, 2018, a Supreme Court in India ruled that one of the kind of holiest temples of Hinduism in India was no longer able to be cut off to women when they're menstruating. Mm. And it was, the protests against it were massive. Women were having to, like, go up to this temple in the dark so that they could get up there without people essentially attacking them. Like, it was huge.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure from memory, Mona Eltahawe writes about this in her book, Seven Deadly Sins.
Oh, yeah, I think she does.
Yeah, and about how she goes to the mosque while she's menstruating. I'm going to struggle through that whole episode. And it's kind of like this, like, little silent protest for her.
I read that menstrual cycle-related symptoms have been recognized and treated by physicians for at least the past 3,800 years. One of the oldest surviving medical texts describes highly recognizable menstrual experiences.
Mm. I have many things to say about the doctors, medicalization and whatnot, but we can get to that in a little bit. I have one other thing I want to read that from the history of it. So this is from the first Latin encyclopedia, so 73 AD. This kills me. Okay. So, contact with menstrual blood turns new wine sour. Crops touched by it become barren. Grass die. Seed and gardens are dried up. The fruit of trees fall off. The edge of steel and the gleam of ivory are dulled. Hives of bees die. Even bronze and iron are at once seized by rust, and a horrible smell fills the air. To taste it drives dogs mad and infects their bites with an incurable poison.
Oh my God.
Like,
I wish my period was that strong. If
I mean, that's some powerful shit.
I'd be making money off that bitch. I'd be like, you want to see me turn this dog into a rabid dog with a poisonous bite? Like, come here, give me $50.
Yeah. So that made me laugh so much. But, like, you can kind of see, like, these ideas are really ingrained, like, really long-standing ideas around, like, stigma and taboos.
And I think, I mean, what would an episode of this podcast be without mentioning the patriarchy? But when you say, like, the stigmas, like, are long-standing and all of that, it's really interesting because a lot of what I was reading was around this idea of, you know, the normal body is not a bleeding body.
Who defined the fucking normal body?
But, I mean, that's essentially what we're taught, you know, when you're bleeding, it's abnormal.
What would this podcast also be if we didn't mention Freud?
Oh my God. Yep.
So Freud had many things to say.
Doesn't he just?
But some of my favorites were, the first thing I read about it was that Freud related the stigma and, like, negative perceptions around periods because of our fear of blood. And I was like, Freud, that is a very simplistic analysis coming from you.
And you know who bleeds? Your mother. Your mother bleeds.
And you wish you had a penis. You wish. But something that did also strike me was that, so in 1926, Freud's prognosis for women suffering through their reproductive cycle got pretty, like, pessimistic. And he said, indeed, there is not much that can be done. Nature must help. or time. With women, there is first menstruation, then marriage, and later on, menopause. Finally, death is a real help.
The circle of life.
So that's pretty bleak.
I found another. What was he? He was a gynecologist in the 1930s, who was the first gynecologist, or the first formal medical description of premenstrual tension, which is the precursor to PMS. And this article was making these really interesting points. So I essentially just read about 300 pages of this book, which is called The Palgrave Handbook of Critical Menstruation Studies. And it was like 1,000 pages long. And I went through and read any of the ones that looked interesting. And quite honestly, I'm probably going to go back and keep reading it. it was incredibly interesting. But this article was around PMS and the fact that, you know, we've created PMS as, don't want to say like psychological, but, you know, more to do with the psychological effects rather than the physical effects, and how because we've created it this way, like medically, it means that doctors are continuing to misdiagnose women for the physical effects that can be stuff like up to and including seizures, because they're not considering the fact that they're cyclical with their menstrual cycle. This gynecologist, so his paper initially included things like cyclical asthma, epilepsy, cardiac irregularity, but then ended up focusing on nervous tension. And I've got some examples of his descriptions of symptoms of nervous tension. This is in 1931. His last name is Frank. Husband to be pitied, unbearable shrew, or impossible to live with.
I mean,
this is a gynecologist describing symptoms.
Unbearable shrew. I am like that most of the month.
Did you see that? Did you see that in my vagina, gynecologist?
Oh, there's an unbearable shrew in here. God. I was going to save this bit for later, but we're here now, so we're going to dive in. Because I have a bit more on this topic, which I just find fucking fascinating. And I went on a real deep dive looking into this idea of pathologizing menstrual cycle and women's bodies in general, or, you know, people who menstruate in general.
Can I make a contentious point here?
Yes.
I don't like it when men and women say things like, oh, I'm just going through PMS, to talk about behavior that they've done.
Oh, totally.
Like, particularly when people who menstruate say something like that, I kind of am like, that it's not a disorder. You know, you don't have a disorder because you're menstruating.
Yeah.
And I don't think we should equate those things.
Well, let me tell you. All right.
Yeah, so, we're going to talk about the DSM again, aren't we?
You better friggin' believe it. Okay, so for people who weren't listening to previous episodes, we've spoken about the DSM before. So the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Medical Disorders. It's the handbook that's used by healthcare professionals in the US, but also much of the world.
It's very, very influential.
It's hugely influential. And it's kind of like the authoritative guide to the diagnosis of mental, air quote, disorders. And we've spoken about it in reference to, I think we spoke about it, about nymphomania. What else have we spoken about it?
It's definitely come up a few times.
Yeah, they have, it's a recurring theme.
Oh, fetishes.
Yeah, that's right. It's a recurring theme of like pathologizing people's sexualities and bodies. So, you know, here we are again. So you mentioned that it was previously called premenstrual tension. And so this evolved into premenstrual syndrome in 1953, which was like the kind of the first step towards medicalizing the menstrual cycle more formally. And then in the 80s, it appeared in the DSM. We saw the emergence of PMDD, which is premenstrual dysphoric disorder, which is kind of like similar to PMS, but much, much more serious is kind of how they describe it.
And also, sorry, just another kind of side note. I also don't want to minimize that some people who menstruate experience a range of symptoms and a range of severity. And for some people, it is,
unbearable.
And that is another thing that is misdiagnosed and ignored by a lot of medical professionals.
Totally. Well, this is where I think the debate kind of gets really juicy, because people who menstruate symptoms and experiences should be taken seriously and listened to, physical and otherwise. But there's this big debate about whether or not that is actually achieved by having it in the DSM. So in 2008, there was a big debate about it, about whether it should continue to be in there. It was around a lot of these ideas around if it kind of continued to pathologize this experience. And also, because it's really hung up on the more psychological aspects of things. So, mood swings, depression, difficulty concentrating, irritability, fatigue, things like that. I guess fatigue's both physical and mental, I guess.
Well, and that's one of the interesting things as well, is that this idea that, we're talking down the physical aspects of PMS and talking up the mood aspects, when it's actually some people suffer severe cramps. Mm. And yeah, maybe that makes them a bit angry.
Yeah. Well, and so one of the arguments for having it in the DSM is that it's supposed to mean that it's more readily and easily studied. But there's all kinds.
But the DSM isn't about their physical attributes.
No, but they were kind of being like, oh, but if it's in here, then there can be more studies about the...
Yeah. I mean, I know that you don't agree with this argument, which is why I'm not going to attack you. But
no, it's ridiculous.
But other things like a thyroid condition, which is also hormonal and causes mood swings, is not in the DSM. So, why?
Because it's still a really gendered thing and we hate women.
I mean, just putting it out there.
But so alongside this, what was happening was the media started to pick up PMS and PMDD and started to talk about the loss of productivity and the billions of dollars lost in revenue. Woo, capitalism. And so then it became sort of seen as this disorder or disease. And then...
And that's also ridiculous. This is making me so angry.
And so now we start seeing an industry focused on creating a cure. And that's when fluoxetine, Prozac essentially, started to become widely available.
Yeah.
Prozac is used to treat all kinds of things, which also makes this whole studying idea really wobbly, because it's is there PMDD being ameliorated by this Prozac, or is it because they've also maybe got depression or anxiety or something else going on in their life, and the Prozac is having an impact on that, So rounding this up, a few... I read so much. I'm trying to pick the highlights. So a few people who were on the committee for the DSM argued pretty strongly against it staying on there in 2008, saying things like it unnecessarily pathologized the hormonal changes in the menstrual cycle, saying that it is harmful to people who suffer PMDD because it leads them to believe that they're mentally ill. Oh, and... tying it all together in this beautiful little, I don't want to say conspiracy, but it's all connected.
it is a conspiracy. Again, it's called the patriarchy. Yeah. the biggest conspiracy there is.
So it was criticized because there was also financial interests happening alongside it. So this company called Lilly & Co. paid for a big trial of this Prozac.
Oh, sorry. I obviously meant the patriarchy and capitalism, but yes. Carry on.
And allegedly members of the committee of the DSM received funding from this company. So it's just it goes all the way to the top. And so it stayed in the DSM. DSM-5 is the most up-to-date. The reason behind it was that they concluded that women have historically been undertreated and told they were making their symptoms up, and that the formal diagnostic criteria would spur more funding, research, diagnosis, and treatment for women with PMDD. So there you go.
For the mood aspects of it.
Yes.
So, I mean, I guess I should get back to the story.
Okay, well, let's take a break and we'll come back in a second.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So if we circle back to the story.
Yeah, that was a big detour there.
These two characters find out that they like each other. And he's saying something. He's like, oh, you know, yeah, you're in pain or whatever, but I still think you're super beautiful. And
you're beautiful, you know, when you're in pain.
You're beautiful when you bleed. I wonder how many sentences can be a compliment to a woman on her period, but also something a serial killer would say to his victim.
That's a fun game.
So then he kind of trails off and she's like, what? No, you can tell me, like, we're good friends, blah, blah, blah. And he says, I've never admitted this to anyone before, but I've got a bit of a thing for girls on their period. I just think it's really sexy and hot.
Mm-hmm.
Are you for real? Steve took a hand off my shoulder and placed it over his heart. I swear, I'm serious. I've always wanted to fuck a girl on her period, but I've never had the chance.
I so solemnly swear.
He looked so sweet and adorable, yet sexy and masculine. I didn't know how...
moving the chips delicately.
I didn't know how I should react, but I felt uncharacteristically bold. It was now or never, I reasoned with myself. Steve liked me. I liked him. Time to take the plunge. So let's fuck.
Excellent. Excellent.
So I think it's like a good time to talk about men's opinions of periods.
We love giving air to men's opinions on things.
And I mean, have you, if you're willing to share, no pressure.
I mean.
Have you come across this with guys?
Like actively liking having sex while I'm on my period?
Or actively disliking it, like either end of the spectrum?
Some guys have definitely avoided it. And some have also, like, I might mention that I'm on my period and then the default will be like, oh, well, no worries. It feels like it's an assumption that I don't want to have sex. So then it would be up to me to be like, no, it's fine.
Do you feel like there's a certain obligation of disclosure?
I mean, obligation's a strong word, but I think it's polite. I think if I was getting freaky with someone who menstruates and I was surprised by it, it doesn't necessarily mean it would stop me, but I'd be like, oh
yeah. I mean, I feel pretty similarly. I feel like if you are menstruating, it is kind of polite because it's an added thing.
Yeah,
like you have to negotiate an added liquid and also something that stains.
Yeah, the logistics.
I know one partner who explicitly told me that they were fine with it. And then because I've been on birth control for so long that has stopped my period, I just haven't really had to think about it. Which is also why, like, this research was really interesting to me, because I found myself at some points being like, oh, reading all of this, I think I get it now. The people who menstruate, who are into it, and really, and like, get something out of it. That's never been me. I've never been truly disgusted by it. I've just been apathetic about the whole process my entire life. The only thing, it's not disgust, it's the inconvenience that does it for me. I hate having to plan.
Well, that I think is interesting in and of itself because, so I read a study that was about women's, specifically women's in this case, sort of perceptions around their period and pleasure and disgust. So in the participants that they had in this study, majority of them had negative connotations with having sex with their period. And they separated those into four different categories. And one of the biggest categories was the physical labor component of it. And when I say that, I mean like having to clean the sheets, having to clean the messy bed. A hot tip for anyone who doesn't already know this, if you're washing period stains out of your undies, make sure you use cold water, because if you use hot water, it'll cook the blood.
Oh my God. Oh my God. That is a tip people do not share with you until it's too late.
Oh, my mum taught me that early days. Love you, mum.
Ah, my mum did not teach me that.
Anyway, so the thing that I find fascinating about this is that it ties back to kind of like the mental load and emotional labor and all the other extra bits that women are thinking about. And that ends up like, that's not so much even about the act of period sex. It's about all the stuff around it. And many of the people who responded to our Instagram survey said really similar things. It was like, I don't want to have to put a towel down. I don't want to have to clean it up. I get it. I hear you. But like, there's an assumption there that it has to be you who cleans it up.
Yeah. And it's interesting because I don't necessarily disagree that the person who is bleeding should clean up their blood. But I also think if a man were to just jizz all over my sheets, that I would want him to clean that up. Like the person with the excess fluids should be doing the cleaning, regardless of gender. But yeah, like I wouldn't it's not the hill I'm gonna die on. You know, I'm sure other people have very valid reasons why it shouldn't just be.
Well, I think like if you had a partner who was really, really into it, a bloodhound, as they are commonly known on the internet.
Woof.
Yeah.
That's an upsetting term.
Then, you know, like if they're super into it and they're like, yeah, I want to get messy. Yeah. I want to like bathe my body in your blood. Then I'd be like, well, okay, we're going to get a tarp or something though, right?
Sorry, I stand corrected. It's either the person with the excess fluid or the person who's really into the excess fluid.
So they didn't want to focus just on the negative attitudes. So I did a bit of digging around about people who are like super into period sex, and they do exist.
Nature's lube.
Yeah. I ended up on a subreddit that I didn't realize was going to be so graphic.
We haven't even gotten to the graphic parts of this story yet.
Oh, man.
I was reading one thing that was saying that there was research from Taiwan, UK and Australia, and the Australian research was in 2017, which indicates that gender-segregated health and sexual education curricula rarely include menstruation in the content covered with boys. And I was reading stuff, admittedly from like the late 80s, where it was saying that the boys interviewed thought that menstruation was because the bladder was broken and they were like peeing blood.
Oh, God.
So, and it said, you know, a lot of men learn about periods from their partners. And that's so late in the game.
So late in the game.
But, and the other thing I found really interesting was that they found that negative views towards it were more pronounced in younger men.
Mm.
So those men who don't have partners or haven't yet been able to have a partner, have no education about it, they are more likely to think that it's, you know, an illness or, you know, something along those lines.
And then they'll have that confirmed by the DSM. So I read a study, male perception about the inconveniences associated with monthly bleeding for their partner. So this was a survey for over 5,000 men across 13 countries in 2017. And one of the things that stuck out to me as I was listening to you before talking about this, like, this idea of fixating on the mood element of it, the emotional and mental side of it rather than the physical side of it, is that almost all men in this study reported that their partners experienced menstruation-related symptoms and they focused on mood-related symptoms, whereas their perception of their partners experiencing physical symptoms was significantly less so. So, and it just made me immediately be like, oh, I wonder how much of that is to do with this kind of perception or expectation that women are moody and irritable and a shrew on their periods.
Do you feel like you have mood swings? I mean, and also the mood swings make sense, right? Because it's hormonal. So yeah. Definitely not saying people do not have mood swings, but do you feel that you have mood swings premenstrual or otherwise?
I have mood swings in general. I am a moody bitch.
I'm a moody bitch.
I am. I am old enough to acknowledge the fact that I have got some fucking moods.
I'm proud of you. All right, back to the story.
Yeah.
So she's wearing a matching set of red lingerie. Lol.
On her period? I think not. She's wearing her period underwear.
And he asks if he can take the bath.
Oh, he asks. That's cool.
I know. There were some good things. She's like, what about the couch? And he just like puts a blanket around her and is like, oh, we'll cover it with this. The blanket's old. I don't care if it gets messy. So I was like, that's nice. Then it says, he gave the inside of my thighs a few kisses and then unleashed his tongue. Go free! Unleashed his tongue on my vulva, licking the labia and quickly over my clitoris. I trembled with delight. My period made everything feel far more intense. Then it says... It says, also he's got a giant penis, because of course he does.
Of course.
The smell of my sex mixed with the coppery scent of blood, I could see by how hard Steve was that it was a big turn on for him. I gushed blood as Steve began to finger me.
Oh, gushing.
And then she says, you know, oh, baby, I want you, blah, blah, blah. I knew his wide girth would fill my tight little snatch perfectly.
Tight little snatch.
And my sexy friend Steve.
I don't believe it. I don't buy it.
But you know what that made me think is that in all of our reading, I don't think snatch has really come up before.
No, I don't think it has.
I feel like this is our first snatch, or at least one of the first.
I don't love it.
What about he slid his erect cock into my wet, slippery slot?
I mean, it's kind of a little bit what is it when it doesn't rhyme but it like sounds the same?
Oh yeah, I don't know, but I know what you're trying to say. And then she comes and she says, an orgasm passed through me, the most intense one I'd ever experienced. He pulled out, dripping a small trail of blood on the blanket underneath us. And then he finishes on her ass.
Oh, okay.
It's a withdrawal method kind of vibe.
Well, and I'm glad, didn't mention a condom, right? Yeah. I'm glad because I think there's this like perception that you can't get pregnant while you've got your period, which is not necessarily, like, it's lowered, but it's not necessarily the case. So I'm glad he came on her ass.
Yeah. Yeah.
Safety first.
Safety first. Oh, sorry. As he's coming on her ass, he's jerking off with one hand and then he reached around my front, massaging my moist, bleeding snatch.
Wow.
While he expertly finished himself off with his dominant hand, full stop. Every girl needs a man who can multitask.
Ain't that the truth? I was expecting you to, at that point, for there to be like rubbing blood on bodies and things like that.
Oh, no. It was just your garden variety period sex. It was, yeah. I mean, it was okay. It wasn't my bag, but it was definitely not the worst thing I've ever read. Like, if we're looking at more positive things, some women do report higher sex drives, mm-hmm. also yeah. more sensation on their period. So it is actually, they can have more intense feelings having period sex. So it can actually be really, really pleasurable for women.
Yeah.
I mean, for people who menstruate.
Yeah. I've certainly heard anecdotes from people I know who menstruate, and also just from doing some reading, that, you know, it's common to experience stronger orgasms or to relieve like cramps and tension as well, which is, you know, that's nice if you've got period cramps.
Oh yeah, that's the other thing.
Yeah. Something else that I read, I read a couple of studies, and one of them found that the women that participated in that study had positive associations with their period also had positive associations with masturbation and with like their sexuality in general. And so they were kind of positing that, you know, it's all kind of tied into this idea of being comfortable in your body and your body's processes, including, you know, the ugly, the blood and the bleeding and the, you know, the sexy stuff.
I tried to find information around lesbian relationships and their approach to period sex, assuming that it would be better than heterosexual relationships, and it is like, it is a bit better, but the differences weren't so big as I was expecting.
We still live in the same society that still has the same stigmas and stuff, and
yeah, pretty much, yeah. So I was kind of like, you know, definitely you know, falling into that trap of thinking lesbians live in this utopia of yeah. you know, no gender politics kind of relationship system.
I read one that study that tried to look at race and sexual identity, like tried to sort of see if there were any differences in terms of attitudes towards periods and period sex. The findings were not super robust, in my opinion, but they loosely found that the white women in the sample felt more positively towards menstruation and their bodies. And they sort of drew the conclusion from that being that white women receive more like cultural and social validation for their bodies, albeit within like a very narrow scope of what it is to be beautiful. And they also found that the women in the study who were bisexual or lesbian generally had, yeah, more sort of positive connotations. And there was this quote that stuck out to me, which said, "The sexual identity findings point to some troubling aspects of heterosexuality and the possible
liberatory aspects of lesbianism and bisexuality."
Do we read the same thing?
I have that quote highlighted. I guess that was one of the things. So this Palgrave handbook had a range of articles on a range of different matters with menstruation. And one of the things that I definitely didn't appreciate is that this is such a practical example of multiple intersectionalities. You know, it was talking about how women in jail deal with how people who menstruate in jail deal with this issue, because there are instances of jails withholding sanitary items, or if you're not able to afford them, what you can do when you're in jail.
Mm.
And obviously, you know, you have the issues with trans people and how menstruating can affect them in both ways that are positive and negative, you know. You also have homeless women who can't afford sanitary items, and essentially if you do free bleed and you're not a white privileged woman who's made a political choice to do that, and you rely on, let's say, begging for food and you smell like period blood, that's a massive effect on your life that a lot of people don't really think about. The other thing that I read, and I apologize to disability activists for not knowing about this, but the fact that in Australia we still have non-consensual sterilization of women and girls with disabilities, and one of the reasons that is put forward for sterilization is because these women and girls are viewed as mentally and physically incapable of meeting the gendered norms to conceal their menstruation and control their sexuality and manage their fertility. And
actually says that to conceal.
Oh no, that's like from the article. That's not like.
That's, I was gonna say that's fucked. But
it is explicitly stated in some of the judgments that one of the reasons that judges have taken into consideration is the added labor it adds on their carers.
Right. Ooh.
Yeah, and it's also seen as, you know, if it makes somebody more irate and they become harder to deal with because it contributes to their disability. But the fact that we still have non-consensual sterilization to me is kind of mind-boggling.
Yeah, fuck me. I didn't realize that. That's fucked.
Hmm. Got anything else?
Tying it back to erotica and romance. I mean, yeah.
Oh, is that what we're doing?
I mean, far. I don't know. Like, nothing coming after that feels okay. But
it's kind of crazy because, as I was saying, like, I haven't had my period now in like 3 years. I kind of forget. It was really interesting for me to read all of these studies around menstruation and remember how I used to feel when I had my period, and, you know, how angry I would get at essentially, having to change my life because of this.
Yeah, I mean, it can be really fucking shit. Like, I came off contraception last year. After 5 years of not really having a period.
And I guess we should say hormonal contraception as well.
Yeah. You know. So, and I missed it. I missed having a cycle. I missed having, like, feeling kind of, this sounds a bit woo-woo, but feeling a bit more in touch with my body. And
I don't experience, anything. I'm dead inside.
Well, I do also wonder how much of that is because of being brought up with a different kind of emphasis placed on it, like how much of that I've just kind of absorbed as being like,
yeah,
I am beautiful and I am shedding the month. And
one of the things that shocked me reading this and my reaction to it was that at points, because I chose this form of contraception and a large reason behind me choosing it was to get rid of my period, it made me feel as if I was a bit of a gender traitor.
Oh, that's interesting.
And because menstruation through all these articles was really put forward as this really multifaceted topic and an area of resistance and somewhere that there is so much kind of activism happening around it. And I was like, ooh, I've just never felt connected to it in the way that it seems like a lot of other people who menstruate do.
It's just a thing. It's like shit for you.
Yeah, it was. It is. And honestly, if I could choose to never shit again without it doing irreparable harm to my body, I probably would.
I certainly feel much more connected to it than you do, obviously, given you feel no connection to it.
It would would be pretty difficult to feel less connected.
And I am really drawn to this idea of it being like the political nature of it and the power that's in it. That draws me to it even more so than this, like, ooh, I'm a person with cycles like the moon, you know, which I also like.
I think we should also point out as well that obviously everyone's different, but another thing that may come into your relationship with your period is also around your fertility.
Definitely.
If you struggle with fertility, but also if you really want to have children, that can definitely, like, massively impact the way that you feel about
this episode, man. So, I mean, I was reflecting a little bit about how periods show up or don't show up in erotica and romance. And, I mean, aside from 50 Shades of Grey, where he pulls out her tampon.
Yeah, that was the sound. Did you hear my sound?
I haven't really come across it in like a sexual way. Like, I think occasionally it might pop up on TV and in movies, but rarely in like a sexual context. So a lot of people responded to our Instagram story survey. Highly scientific.
Thank you for your responses. They were great.
They were great. And so most people responded really positively to the questions. Like, most people lent towards being pro period sex. Not in the sense that they're like professional period sexes.
That's their job. I'm a professional period
menstruator.
Sexer.
Menstruator.
From now on, I'm going to call all humans robots that bleed.
Most people were really positive about it. A few, like, obviously there's nuance, right? Like, it's not always going to be, I mean, unless you're like really into it and, you know, you're a bloodhound, it's not always going to be your thing, but a lot of people responded.
Aren't bloodhounds those like dogs with the droopy faces?
They're not sexy. I would not let a bloodhound near me while I was menstruating or any time. A few people drew the line like around penetration versus oral sex, which I think is an entirely reasonable boundary. Mm. I've never experienced oral sex while menstruating or performed it while a partner's been menstruating before.
I think I would personally not be able to get out of my head.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Like,
yeah.
Just from on the receiving end, I would be like, oh... Yeah, I would definitely, it would be a lot harder to get out of my head.
Yeah, I think I would struggle to relax. Mm. And there's a lot tied up in that. Some people sort of responded saying that they liked the messiness of it. Like, it is gross, but that's kind of part of the appeal, that, you know, you get to kind of be a bit filthy and like just kind of embrace that when the spirit moves you, and then go back to regular old
normal
sex.
Gross sex that has other fluids.
And I kind of get that. Like, I think that I wouldn't wait all month and then be like, now's the time. But I think that the appeal for me of doing it while I'm menstruating is kind of that, like, I don't want to use the word primal, but like a kind of like
I think it's an acceptance that, like, what you're doing is at its heart a very pleasurable bodily function.
Yeah. Like, there's also something I think to be said for a level of intimacy that you can feel with a partner or partners if you are sharing that and it's comfortable and it's accepted and embraced. Like, there's something like psychologically pleasurable, I think, in knowing that your partner or partners aren't being like, ugh, you're disgusting body.
Yeah, and it's like they're seeing you at a point that a lot of people wouldn't see you, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's...
They've leveled up.
They have leveled up. The other main pleasure point was the kind of rebellion of having sex while you're on your period and like going against those taboos, which I also totally get. And that's where a lot of people's like sexual fantasies come out of, you know? Yeah. And in that instance, actually, like being a bloodhound makes a lot of sense. Because it's a societal taboo that you are going against in much the same way as, you know, dom sub situations. Yeah,
that's very true. What an excellent point.
Why, thank you. I just came up with it then. So, because we haven't gotten too sexy on this episode, I thought I could finish us up with a bit of a reading from the book.
Finish me off, Abby. Go on.
So she's come, and then he takes a picture of her, and it was a little bit concerning, but sure, they just kind of carried on. And then she starts to finger herself, and she says... just furiously fingering my bloody hole. Suddenly, my body gave way to another incredible orgasm, which made a spurt of blood trickle from my thighs. So I quite like that they ended on a squirt situation. and then they continue to not watch any of the shark movies, which I know is what everyone was really hanging out to know about, but I cannot report back on the shark movie.
You know, this might be an overshare and I may cut this out afterwards, but like having period sex, another positive for me in my experience has been it speeds up your period. Like, it just seems to, like, encourage it to get out faster.
It flushes it out. Genuinely. I think we've spoken about this. I think you've told me this theory of yours before.
Yeah, I mean, look, make of that what you will.
You know what? I don't think there's enough science into that aspect of it.
This is what they should be researching.
Need more studies.
So, okay, so to wrap this up properly.
I feel like we've said, that's like the fourth time we've said that.
Okay, so to end, I want to end on a good note, a recommendation. I think you actually shared this with me years ago.
Yeah, this is probably around 2014, Abby, who was really into slam poetry.
Yeah.
Maybe 2015.
Yeah, so this... it came out in 2014, so it must have been around then. This slam poet called Dominique Christina wrote the period poem. You should have a look on YouTube. I'll put the link in the show notes, but it is genuinely one of the most, like, I don't love the word empowering, but it's one of the most empowering things I have seen. And I feel like I watch it probably about 12 times a year, monthly.
Oh, is it that time of the month again? Yeah, it's the time I watch my slam poetry.
It is so fucking good, and it like gives me chills every time.
I think for a while I had it like written down and printed out somewhere in my room.
It's really good. Like, it's beautiful. Please go and listen to it.
Books love.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.